And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
And welcome, everybody, Hands-On Apologetics. It's great to be with you today. That was an interesting opener, but nevertheless, we will get the show on the road and talk about apologetics. You have entered into the Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo, and I'm your sensei, Gary Matuta, and it's great to be with you today. I'm fired up. It's going to be a fun show because we are going to have a heavyweight apologist, Lebanese lover of our Lord, Paul Thomas, is going to be coming on the show. Many of you remember Paul. He's been on the show a few times. And this guy, you know, I love him because the energy level, his enthusiasm, his piety, and his knowledge of apologetics is just like way up there. So it's always fun to have him on the show. We're going to talk about Peter and the church, and a very important topic. And he's going to share his own experiences, you know, dialogue, because that's what this show is all about. It's hands-on apologetics. We try to make it as practical as possible and giving you information that you can use and also kind of tap into personal experience. And Paul definitely is loaded with personal experience in dialogue. So we're going to have him coming up on the other side of the first break. And let's see. We do our Finding the Fallacy. The Finding the Fallacy for today is a Latin name of Tu Quoque Fallacy. And we'll explain what the tu quoque means in Latin when we do that. Little teaser there. That will hold you at least for another 5 minutes or so. And also, we're going to meet one of the early church fathers, who is Socrates Scholasticos. So, you know, good stuff in store for us today. And you are part of the program. So when Paul comes on the other side of the break, give us a call if you have any questions or comments at 888-526-2151. That is 888-526-2151. Love to hear from you. Or you could always send your questions. Maybe you don't want to go on the air. Maybe you just like to share your experience, or maybe you have some questions. Shoot us your questions via email at questions@handsonapologetics.com. That flies through the internet to my email box, in which I answer every email. And indeed, sometimes I even bring them on the air. So it's time for our shout-outs. Ladies and gentlemen, for those watching live stream on social media such as Facebook and YouTube, hello everybody. Great to see familiar names. Thank you, Navy 76, for that emoji explosion. I appreciate it. All right. Is this another repeat? Well, it depends. If you're watching it right now on August 1st, this is live. The dojo is live and well. If you're listening to it as a podcast, however... Yes, it is a repeat. That's a trick question. A trick question coming from our live feed from YouTube. Let's see. Oh, I need to mention this. All you apologetics fan, all you Catholic apologists that want to sharpen your skills to share the faith, explain the faith, share it with others, I need to tell you about this event that's coming up. Hands-On Apologetics, Virgin Most Powerful Radio, is also teaming up with two outstanding apologists in their own right, John DeRosa and also Pat Flynn of the Pat Flynn Show. And, of course, John DeRosa is with the Classical Theism podcast. We're going to team up, the three of us, and we are going to have a live YouTube event. I believe it's August 21st, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the three of us are going to come out. We're going to talk about apologetics and, you know, how it's changed over the years, tips on sharing your faith. And we're going to also have a live Q&A session, the three of us. That's going to be tons of fun. Those guys are great, and they're both incredibly knowledgeable in the field of apologetics. I mean, I take notes when I have them on the show or I'm listening to their stuff. So we're going to get together. We're going to do that. And also, folks, if you want freebies, and I'm all for freebies because, let's face it, I mean, we have families to take care of. We have things to do. Cash is almost always tight. And, you know, if you're going to get rid of cash, if you're going to separate yourself from cash, donate it to, like Virgin Most Powerful, that. But, if you're going to buy books or resources, you now know which are the best. And that's why I love freebies, because freebies are free and they're good resources. If you go to handsonapologetics.com and you scroll below the Hands On Apologetics Live banner, you'll see a white banner there that will basically say something like, would you like to learn how to win every religious argument or something to that effect? Click it and it'll bring up a sign-up sheet. You will get a free ebook, and also John DeRosa, Pat Flynn, and myself are going to do three pre-recorded stuff on defending the whole spectrum of the faith, from theism to Christian apologetics to Catholic apologetics. And you're going to get those free as well. So, the live event, you can just jump on YouTube on August 21st and check us out. But if you want to cash in on the freebies, you need to go through that sign-up sheet, because that's how you get all the freebies. So just FYI, here at the dojo, like I said, I try to save money, give you good practical and free stuff, and that's part of the freebies. All right, so very good. Without further ado, then, let's go to our critical thinking skills portion of the dojo. And as you know, every episode we pick a informal fallacy. Sometimes we do propaganda. But today's informal fallacy is the tu-quoque fallacy. And it's also known as the et tu fallacy. And what does that mean? Well, basically, it's Latin for you too. Okay? Very fancy, isn't it? And what is it? Well, it's claiming that an argument is flawed by pointing out that the one making the argument is acting inconsistently with the claims of the argument. In other words, it's pointing to hypocrisy. If someone says, you should treat everyone with kindness, and then they turn around and say, oh, yeah, well, I saw you, saying some mean things to a person and blah, blah, blah. That's the et tu, or the tu quoque fallacy. It's basically attacking the messenger instead of the message. And in this case, what it tries to do is expose some sort of hypocrisy on the point of the person delivering the message. Now, again, this is an ad hominem attack. It goes to the man, not to the argument. It also functions a little bit like a red herring, because usually if someone calls you a hypocrite, your first instinct is to defend yourself. And so that's just a great way of getting you off track and not sticking with the topic. So what do you do with that? Well, with all ad hominem attacks, I think the most effective maneuver is just simply concede it, even hypothetically concede it. Say, fine, let's say what you said is true. I was mean to someone. I said some unkind words. Nevertheless, we should be kind to each other, or whatever. That way it kind of takes the wind out of their sails and it refocuses the argument. So that's our finding of the fallacy for today, the tu-quoque fallacy. And as always, we meet one of the early church fathers. And the cool thing about listening to this program is if you listen consistently, eventually, you're going to know pretty much all the early church fathers, who they were, what they did. And so, this program, God willing, is a good program, but it's also good for you. So our early church father for today is Socrates Scholasticos, who was born sometime around AD 380 and died sometime after 439 AD. He got the name Scholasticos because the term, this is interesting, the term Scholasticos is actually, the root means both laziness and long-windedness, and therefore it refers usually to a scholar or a lawyer in particular. So chances are Scholasticos was actually a secular lawyer. Nothing much is known about his life. He was born, like I said, around the year 380 in Constantinople. He was educated by pagan grammarians. He later fled to Egypt as a consequence of some disturbances that followed. He met Theophilus, the bishop of Alexandria, and under his uncle Cyril, met the bishop Theophilus of Alexandria. But Socrates is, now this is not the pagan philosopher, but Socrates Scholasticos is known mostly for his history of the church. Socrates basically was the person who continued another very important work on church history in the early church done by Eusebius of Caesarea, or Caesarea, excuse me. It's interesting to observe that basically our whole knowledge of the first few centuries of the church is largely based on collections made by Eusebius, Philostorgus, I never heard of him before, Socrates, Zosimus, and Theodoret. And if all those works were disappeared, we would basically be in a pinch because our knowledge would be greatly diminished. That's how important these works are. Socrates' History of the Church is 7 books. It was requested by a certain Theodore, who probably was a monk or a cleric. And Socrates, by the way, was a layman. And the history is professedly a continuation of Eusebius' church History of the Church. The work concluded in 323 A.D., just prior to the Council of Nicaea. So what Socrates does in his church history is he backtracks a few years to 305, and then he continues onward. So it's a natural pair for Eusebius' church history. And he does a very good job. He's very objective, but the problem is he's a layman, so he doesn't really understand the import of theological discussion. So that's our Meet the Early Church Father for today. Coming up on the other side of the break, we have Master Apologist Paul Thomas coming into the dojo, and we're going to talk about Peter and the church and dialogue and everything in between. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back.
This is Terry. There's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity. Be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. And, let's kick it up a notch and introduce our guest. Our guest is Paul Thomas. He's an enormously popular Lebanese Maronite Rite Catholic apologist who has done numerous talks with young adults, youth groups, and also conferences with adults. And, you know, I think somewhere, if you trace Jesse Romero's genealogical history back to Lebanon, I'm sure there is a common ancestor between the two, because he seems to me to be cut from the same cloth as Jesse. Paul Thomas, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
My man, Gary, how are you?
Doing well.
Always flattering me.
Well, you know what? It's easy to do. It's easy to do, Paul, because, you know, you are a pretty high-energy kind of guy in general, and I know when it comes to something you're passionate about, like apologetics, it's even more so.
Yeah, it is. Definitely come out of that cloth.
Yeah, you know, before we begin, I introduced you as a Maronite Rite Catholic. You know, let's get that out of the way. If you could maybe explain for the audience, what is the Maronite Rite? How does it relate to Roman Rite?
Well, we're a very unique rite, liturgical rite of the church. We're the only one named after a man, not a place, not a time. We're named after a saint, Saint Marun, who was right around the end of, right around like 380, right around the same time as Saint John Chrysostom. He was a monk, so really our whole rite is based out of asceticism. Really, it's most of our churches are still in ancient monasteries in the side of mountains, and our liturgical practice kind of grew out of his practice of his liturgy. And it was during a really tumultuous time in the church, right after the Council of Chalcedon, however you want to say it. So the Monophysite heresy was really, really tearing the church apart at that time. So if you were for Chalcedon, you almost warred against anti-Chalcedon or Chalcedonius. It was really tumultuous. So they went up into these mountains in Lebanon, which at the time it was there was a school called Edessa. That was a really big theological school in the east. Saint Ephrem, you know, most of the Syriac saints, this was their schooling. So we just kind of separated ourselves up into the mountains of Lebanon, and for 1,600 years we've stayed there. And we've been there so long, we're a rite of people, but we're almost classified as an ethnicity.
Huh.
Because we've been separated for so long. Now, granted, our liturgy, what it was then and what our liturgy is now, we've been really Latinized, willingly. So the Maronite rite you see today, if you go to the monasteries in Lebanon, it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But it's unique, and we're a really unique Eastern Rite that we've never lost communion with the Bishop of Rome. We've always been in communion, even when, you know, back then there was no, now something happens, you hear about it the same day. So the Pope says something at one, I hear about it at two.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, you didn't get messages for a long time. You could be separate from, you know, the world for hundreds of years, and we were, and we've developed our own liturgical practices. Now, granted, we're Catholic. Our dogma is the same. All of our dogma is the same. Now, we do have a little difference in interpreting certain theologies and philosophies, but a lot of the rites are, you know, just like the Greek rite uses leavened bread, or we use unleavened bread. Little things like that are different, but we're Holy Catholic.
Yeah,
but we're
so
Syriac.
Mm-hmm.
So our liturgy is Aramaic instead of Latin. And, you know, the doxology said at a different time, and the little things are different. But I think it's something that everyone should go experience at least once, especially a Latin rite should go, just go to a Maronite. We don't even call it Mass. That's another difference. It's divine liturgy.
Yeah. Yeah, I second that. It's beautiful liturgy.
It is nice.
Hey, you know, our engineer Richard has a question for you. He said there's another famous Lebanese Maronite, Danny Thomas, and he was wondering if there's any relationship.
No, he's actually from there's a place in Lebanon called the Wadi Khadija. It's the Holy Valley. This is where, like, the home of the Maronites. Now, my village is the first one in the Khadija called Turza. That's where I'm from. Danny Thomas was from the village right across the river from ours called Sirayin. So if you go back far enough, we're probably related. But his real last name wasn't Thomas like mine. He's Lahoud. It's his family. I'm Beit Aziz.
Okay.
A lot of us Lebanese that came before the 50s changed our name. But no relation. Probably, 4 or 5 centuries ago. But he's definitely one of the more famous Maronites in America.
Oh, yeah, sure. Why Thomas, by the way? I mean, we're kind of getting off the trail, but...
Well, what is really weird is, the Hebrew name Thomas is Thomas. Okay. It's not Toma, Toman, Tanus. It's Thomas. So, I have a lot of Chaldean friends, last name Thomas. Not changed, it's just Thomas. Hmm. My dad's middle name was Tanus. So it was Boulos Tanus Aziz. They just changed it to Paul Thomas. It was easy. They came in 45. They wanted to be American, and Thomas sounded American. But it's from Tanus.
Okay. Okay. Well, there you go. Richard, I got your answer for you. Yeah. Richard was saying, and as you know, Terry Barber, the founder of Virgin Most Powerful, he is half Lebanese.
And his family. Barber is actually exactly if that's the actual real last name. It's usually Barbar, like B-A-R-B-A-R, but it's Barber. That's how you'd say it in Lebanese. So.
Well, hey, so everybody, you have a little education on, Maronite, right? Lebanese, learned a little bit about Terry and Paul Thomas and also Danny Thomas. So we do it all here at Hands on Apologetics. Yeah, so hey, let's, without further ado, let's talk a little bit about Peter and the church. Now, like you said, Maronites, we're in fellowship together. You're in communion with the Sea of Rome. You believe the same doctrines. It's just different liturgy, pretty much. So different practices, things like that. So in a sense, your defense of Peter and the papacy, I suppose, would be pretty much the same as a Latin Rite defense.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So
pretty much of any Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Catholic,
that's true.
Should have the same defense because it's what makes us Catholic.
Right.
I mean, if you look at a lot of liturgical practices, Orthodoxy is 98% like us liturgical-wise. The Eucharist and the bishop and the place of the priest and the deacon and how they do their liturgy, the doxology, the creed, everything is the same. It's the papacy, though, that is like a... You guys have, most people, if you've listened to your show, you've heard my story before. Mm-hmm. And it's the papacy that kind of is our tether to Christ. It's something almost like a bungee cord. It's something that holds you. You can go far, but it's that sure rock that kind of holds you to reality. You can go out and explore all these different faiths. And it was what brought me back. It's what made me become Catholic again. It really was. That was the linchpin that I couldn't. If you read the fathers, even if you read scripture, and it's funny, if you read scripture in English, me and you have had this conversation before. It's one of the only languages that translates. You are Peter, and on this rock I build my church. Now, I don't like that translation because it's not a separate name from rock. Even in French, Italian, Syriac, Arabic, it's you are rock and on this rock.
Right.
So when I read it that way, it was, you can't discount something so deep. I mean, he had his name changed. Just the name change alone has only happened, other than Simon Peter, 3 times? And those 3 people are huge figures. They almost built a covenant with them, Abraham, Sarah, and Jacob. So when God changes your name, it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, and the name change usually has something to do with your mission, your divine mission. Because Abram, was... Yep. Father, exalted father, and Abraham is father of a vast multitude.
Yeah.
And
Sarai to Sarah.
Yep. And also Israel.
I mean, Jacob to Israel. I mean, that's a huge one.
Yeah.
But to be called Rock, you know, Rock wasn't a name. It wasn't a name that people had at that time. It's not like, you know, you are Mark or you are Paul. You know, he didn't change his name to another name. He changed his name to a function.
Yeah.
And a strong one. And I think we kind of lose it. And again, what brought me back is, you know, you kind of hear different interpretations. You are Petros and I'm this Petra. You know, he really wasn't calling him a big rock. He was calling him a pebble. And, you know, you kind of get a lot of these just from different apologists, from different, I don't like using the word denomination, but I guess denomination.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, let me set that up for you. For those that aren't familiar with what you're saying, sometimes non-Catholics or anti-Catholics will say, well, in the Greek, in the New Testament, there is two different words. Jesus says you are Petros, which means small stone, but upon this Petra, large foundation, I believe in my church. So non-Catholics would argue, well, since there's two words with two different definitions, he's really saying to Simon, you're a pebble, but upon this large immovable foundation, namely me or your confession of me, I'm going to build my church. That's what you're referring to. So how did you address that?
Well, first of all, and a lot of English speaking, you know, I'm multilingual, so I know a lot of languages. And English is one that doesn't have, we don't put feminine and masculine endings on us. We say his and her. Mm-hmm. Now, you would have to think if he was a, to me, it was a even more proof that it was changing his name. Because if he were to call Peter Petra, it'd be like calling him Rakina. It's a feminine word. So he changed the feminine to the masculine, showing that he's changing his name, a man's name. So he had to use the masculine. He couldn't use the feminine. So what he says in Greek, Jesus wasn't speaking Greek when he spoke to them. You know, Peter was a fisherman. These guys all spoke Syriac. Aramaic was their language. So he wouldn't have said, there is no feminine or masculine ending in Syriac on that word, kepha. Kepha is just kepha, whatever. It's a little stone, a big stone, a person. It's kepha. So when you have, you know, when you have that knowledge in the Syriac, he's changing his name.
Yeah, that's very good. Wait, we're chatting with Paul Thomas about Peter and the church. So you don't want to miss it. You're listening to Hands Apologetics. I'm Gary Machuda. We'll be right back right after this.
Hi, this is Barbara Nicolosi, and we're having a women's conference here at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina on September 7th, 2019. This is going to be a great, great day for you to come and meet a bunch of new friends, wonderful Catholic women who want to deepen their Catholic faith and their understanding of themselves as women. You know, this era right now that we're in, so much confusion. What is it to be a man? What is it to be a woman? You know, the Catholic Church has a lot to say about this, and we're going to hear about them. We're going to hear about John Paul II's letter on women that he wrote from Mary Danielle Barber. She's going to talk about that. She's going to talk about Mary as a model for all of us. It's a topic that we can never reflect on too much. I'm going to talk about Teresa of Avila and the interior castle and how a mystical marriage is what all of us should be called to or are called to as Catholics in our prayer lives, and especially as women in the church. Aileen Blakowski is going to talk about motherhood and homeschooling. And then finally, we have Father Charles Murr. He's going to be the celebrant of the Eucharist. He's going to be here hearing confessions. It's going to be an amazing day. We're going to have an hour of adoration together, time to pray, time to laugh, eat, reflect, grow in our passion for our Catholic faith and our identity as Catholic women. You don't want to miss it. You want to come. You want to bring your friends. You want to bring your daughters, your nieces. That's really an affordable day. So go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and you can register for this conference or call 877-526-2151. The Women's Conference is going to be a great event for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles area, Southern California Catholics. You don't want to miss it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We're chatting with Master Apologist Paul Thomas. And, we're chatting about Peter and the papacy. We were just talking about the Matthew 16, 17, 18, about the Petra argument, that there's two different words. And like you pointed out, Paul, that the, you know, if you look in Aramaic or Syriac, it's just one word. And, you know, that's the one thing I love about, what can I say, Eastern Rite Apologist, is because you have a very different take on stuff. Like, I think the average American Latin Rite, you know, Roman Rite, Catholic, wouldn't have picked up on that unless they read it in a book. But for you, it's like a no-brainer, you know?
Yeah. Well, even when we had the other show about Brothers of the Lord.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, an American hears it, and, well, you know, my next-door neighbor is not my brother. My brother is the one that my mom and dad gave birth to. Well, again, think about someone, an Aramaic speaker 2,000 years ago. We're from villages. We don't think, we're not Western modern culture. This is to know our culture. I mean, you do a lot of stuff with the Chaldean community, so you kind of know a lot of how we speak. And when we call anybody, anyone that is our elder, we call them ammo. We call them uncle. Hmm. It's just sort of how you say, and anyone that I meet that's my age or even my ethnicity, I call Chayye, my brother. It's kind of how we speak. It's how our language and how we refer to people.
Right.
So it's nice to know that culture that this came out of, this Semitic culture, and how they're speaking, and their parables speak to us. And yeah, it was a nice advantage.
Yeah.
It was a blessing being raised in the Syriac Rite.
Yeah. So when you saw that objection, you knew that there was only one word that was used in both places, right? That Jesus said, you are, what's the word?
Yeah, you are Kepha.
You are Kepha, and upon this Kepha I build
which
my church.
Which is why Paul always refers to him as Cephas, Kepha, mm-hmm. which is the Greek transliteration of Kepha, just how you would say it in Greek. He didn't call him Petros, he always called him Kepha.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, interesting thing too, Paul, is in angels, whenever they refer to Simon, they say who is called Cephas. They too, you know, hearken to that name.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, and then when you read the rest of what he tells them, and this is another reason I came back to the church. Now, he gave all the other apostles the same commission, whoever sins you forgive or forgiven, and whatever sins you bind or bound. Peter was there too. Now he tells Peter, whatever you bind is bound, whatever you loose is loose. But you have to think about it. Whatever the other one bind, Peter can loose. And whatever they loose, Peter can bind.
Right.
He has the keys, which is huge. And I think sometimes, you know, we read that verse so much and we kind of say it ho-hum. Well, yeah, you got the keys to heaven and, you know, whatever you bind, the gates of hell. Blah, blah, blah. You just don't think about the veracity of his words and what he told them. And
right.
Who nowadays, and this is, again, when I will get into it about the, you know, I was searching in Protestantism. Who can bind me? Like, you can bind my sins? What, just because you have a Bible, you can say, no, you're not forgiven? And I'm not forgiven in heaven? I mean, this is huge. He gave authority to man. Is God's authority to forgive sins and bind sins? That's a huge deal. You know, that this is something outside of faith. This is like authority given to just these men and their successors, of course.
Yes.
It's a big deal.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, one Catholic apologist, I think it's interesting, at least. I don't know if we could push it as far as he does, but he actually says that in some ways it's harkens to papal infallibility. that, you know, obviously heaven can't bind an error, you know. And so if Peter, said that it's binding that there's four persons of the Trinity, obviously heaven can't ratify that.
No.
Yeah.
Well, you have to believe that the office is protected. The church is protected from error. Now, the popes are not gods. They're not oracles. They're not angels. They're sinful humans just like me and you. But what's funny, your people that object to the papacy, well, they'll say they're protected from error when they read the Bible. So the Holy Spirit can protect each individual interpreter, even though there's thousands of interpretations, but yet you still believe that. But when something's clearly stated, you don't really think that the Holy Spirit can also protect the apostolic office and the church, his bride? Come on. First of all, the proof that the Catholic Church is real is it's still here. It's still here. How many people have been trying to destroy it for 2,000 years? Plus, us idiots inside of it have been trying to destroy it. Willing or not willingly, our sinful nature has always been trying to tear down the church. Yet it's still here strong. It shouldn't be. We don't have an army. We don't have, we're not colonizing anywhere. We're just a church. That's all. Just a collection of a communion of bishops and believers. And 2,000 years, we're still here standing strong.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's not proof, how much more proof do you need?
Yeah, it really is remarkable when you think about all the different dynasties and empires and houses, Habsburg dynasty, all these things are things of the past. In fact, most people have forgotten about it. But for 2,000 years since Jesus, it's still here despite, all like you said, there's been some really huge scandals in the church, all from top to bottom. And yet, it's by the grace of God, we're still here. Yeah, I don't know how people would respond to that, the perpetuity of the church. It certainly seems miraculous.
Well, you know what? People, that when I even say that to people that are completely anti-Catholic, there's really no good response. There's not, because even when Napoleon said he would destroy the church, and I want to believe, was it Pope Leo who was the Pope during Napoleon?
I'm not sure.
I don't remember the exact one, and I don't want to misstate it. But I remember he said, how are you going to destroy it? We've been trying to destroy it for 2,000 years. you can't destroy it, no matter what scandal. I mean, Arianism brought the church to its knees, yet we're still here. You know, heresy has a way of injuring, maiming, but never destroying.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that, I imagine if I was a non-believer, that would be very disconcerting to me, because like the church is the undefeated champion for 2,000 years. How am I going to come up with something that will outlast that?
Well, you even look at most Protestant communities; they don't really last more than three generations till they split to something else.
Yeah,
you just can't unless you have the sure. I almost think of it as a post. So. You're trying to hold up a fence or hold up something for a long time. You know the old saying, you don't build a house on sand, you build your house on a rock.
Right.
Well, I remember I came back to the church, I'm 47, about 14 years. Now, again, everyone's heard my story. I went to every single denomination. I'm talking everyone that I could find. There's probably 15 on each street. So I went to Episcopalians, all their different little splits. I went to Methodist. I went to everywhere. And, conversed with the pastor, whatever you want to call him, asked him these certain questions, and I got a bunch of different answers. Now, what they believed 14 years ago is completely different than today. I mean, the Episcopalian church has married lesbian bishops.
Yeah.
There is no sure rock that the buck stops there. You know, in Catholicism, the buck always stops somewhere. So there's kind of we're a river with banks. You have to have banks so the river can flow in a certain direction. It's not just a puddle. So dogma keeps us in, there are banks. Now you can do anything inside of those banks. You know, you have different kind of mysticisms and even different theologies and the way that we practice, all the different religious orders and different charisms of Jesus that we practice. But at the end, we have that rock that tethers us to, no, you can't go there, to dead end. There is no moving past this. So saith God, it's done. Rome has spoken. Right. But without it, though, you have no sure banks. There is no, what can you even call heresy if you don't have where the buck stops anymore? Because what's heresy today is common practice in a year. And I just couldn't deal with that. I couldn't, I can't accept that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And Mark of Peter.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's a great point. You know, without orthodoxy, there can't be any heresy. You know, so if there's no true church and you just go by the Bible, you know, anything's fair game, I imagine.
It's pure relativism. It really is. It's deconstructionism with private interpretation. And it's also relativism because, I mean, look at our morality today.
Yeah.
I mean, the things that we accept, we would have never accepted 20 years ago. I mean, and granted, we do have a big propaganda machine and it's confusing nowadays with all this counter information. And, but you know what? There's nothing on earth that's built on that rock that just will not move. Like you said, we've watched Rome rise and fall. We've watched the Ottoman Empire. We've watched Constantinople fall. We've watched Genghis Khan and the Mongols. Every great empire, the Hungarian Empire, they've all risen and fallen. Yet we still stand here strong. And it's Jesus was so, you know, he's God, but so perfect that when things are good, we diminish. The church's faith is not as strong. But when you persecute us, that's when we grow.
Right.
So we either have good times or better times. Because when we're persecuted, our faith flourishes. Ingenious. Just an ingenious creator.
Yeah, that's beautifully really? Put, too. Yeah, the worst thing that could happen to the church is if everything goes great.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm from the Middle East. My people are all, you know, again, what separates, not separates, but what makes Eastern Christianity different from Western, at least nowadays. Now we're, the West is starting to feel a little bit of what we felt for the last 1900 years.
Yeah.
You know, my mom is from Syria. In Syria, you're always in risk of losing your life or your faith. Right. Just go to another village, two villages over, and you might get killed for doing the sign of the cross. So our faith is not something we do because our parents do it. It's a privilege, and it's something you could die for.
Absolutely. We're talking with Paul Thomas about Peter and the papacy and the church. Stay tuned, folks. You're listening to Hands On Apologetics. I'm Gary Machuda. We'll be right back.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Matsuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. We're chatting with Paul Thomas. And by the way, Paul's story, his journey of faith, is amazing. And we went over it. If you go to handsonapologetics.com and click on HOA, you know, the Hands-On Apologetics tab, and scroll down to Wednesday, November 28th, you can listen to his story that we did here at Virgin Most Powerful Radio on Hands-On Apologetics. Amazing story of God's grace. And Paul, you know, going back to what we said before the break, you know, I give a shameless plug to my book, Hostile Witnesses, but, you know, it fits really
awesome,
well here.
By the way.
Thanks. It's there's a quote from, it's a higher up in the Nazi regime, where he complains about the demoralization that Catholics are causing. And the Catholics are saying that the church will outlast all this, that this is just political turmoil and a blowover, but the church will always be there. And, you know, the funny thing is the Third Reich was considered to be last for 1,000 years, you know, 1,000-year reign. And it lasted, around 5 years, was it? And the church is still here. So, you know, that's kind of cool because it shows that Catholics in Nazi Germany, you know, they drew counsel and comfort knowing that being in the bosom of the church and being faithful to the church, that it'll outlast any storm, including something as horrible as National Socialism in Nazi Germany.
I mean, of course, I mean, when you say Nazi, it's bad. You know, you don't get any good thoughts when you say Nazi. But you look at what's going on today. I mean, we're in a different kind of, the church is always ripe with turmoil. I mean, You would think, who is the enemy going to attack? You have to expect it, because we're that moral foundation that has to be destroyed if you're the evil one, and you have to.
Yeah, right.
But it's easy now when you constantly hear, what was the saying? Priests and bishops are like airplanes. You never hear about the 2,000 that left today and landed and it was safe. You only hear about the one that crashed.
Yeah.
So you're really never riddled with the good news. And wow, the Catholic Church is the biggest charitable organization in the world. You know, they started 20 orphanages today. No, you hear about the one dissident priest who is, you know, schismatic on homosexuality. You only hear about the one guy. You never hear about all the good, only the bad. And we're in an age where, you know, you have a mass propaganda machine, the radio and TV and movies. And The only time Catholics are cast in good light, like in Hollywood, is when someone needs an exorcism. They always call Father John.
That's true.
We don't know how to deal with this.
And even then, you know, even then they have it where, you know, it's almost like, that Satan sometimes has the upper hand and sometimes the priest loses.
Yep.
And I mean, yeah, it's even then they don't give a fair shake. So, But going back to, you know, when you were, like you said, you were searching, you were talking to different churches, investigating different claims, and you saw, you know, the claim of Peter and you know, the binding and loosing, the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Was it instant, like, okay, that's where I need to be, or were there other struggles?
As a common person being raised in America, I mean, America itself was founded by anti-Catholic Protestants. That's just the truth. But I mean, it was discovered by a Catholic. I mean, if you want to go back to
Columbus, yes.
You know, but we've always been kind of a hated minority here. That's just the truth. So you grow up where anti-Catholicism I mean, right now you can't say anything about any race, creed, except Catholicism. You can rip on Catholics all you want. We're like one of the last acceptable ones to be bashed on in public.
Yeah.
So I grew up in that. You know, being anti-Catholic is just like pretty much apple pie. It's just what you learn.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
again, my family history kind of, you know, my dad's family has been Catholic almost since the first century. And it sort of was not so much the papacy yet, but it was my just the historicity of it. You know, America, you have a 100-year-old building. It's a historical object. Our house back home is 600 years old. You know, our church is 1,500 years old. So you see the continuity of that history and the people still practicing.
Right.
But the papacy, again, it's the oldest living monarchy in the world. And next to that is the cardinal, is the College of Cardinals. We don't control an army. We're not a government. We're not like this powerful people. We're just a faith. That's it. Just a set of beliefs and dogmas. That's it. Yet everyone hates us, and we're still here.
Yeah.
That was one of the main arguments that I had a hard time. I had a hard time hitching my car to something where the buck doesn't stop anywhere. I needed some kind of, it's weird, it's a pun intended, I needed a rock.
Right.
And then you go into the patristic fathers. You know, you start reading Irenaeus, you start reading a lot of the fathers where they say, you know, the preeminent church, it's, you know, Rome, started by the principal apostles, Peter and Paul. It's a link to our past. You know, it's a link right to Jesus. It's, you know, kings in other countries, you trace them back. You know, they always, monarchies thought they were God-granted. That's just their mindset. Same with the nobles. You know, God made us like this. But you think about the papacy. God is the one, literally God in the flesh, crowned him. And it's still here today. And I don't think if it wasn't crowned by God, it wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
It really wouldn't. Yeah. It couldn't.
Oh, I agree. I agree. In fact, you know, in the 1800s, if you read anti-Catholic literature, Protestants were predicting that the Catholic Church was going to be gone in a few years, especially after, you know, they lost the papal states. You know, there wasn't a papal army. It just the Vatican State was formed. And they said, well, now that the church has been stripped of any kind of, you know, temporal power, it's just a matter of time. And of course, they were wrong, just like all the others in the past.
How'd that work out?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of fun to read those because, you know, the thing is, Paul, is if you put yourself, if I was a Catholic back then, I would be concerned. You know, I don't think I would, it would shake my faith or anything, but, you know, boy, that's very concerning. You know, the turn in Europe in the 1700s, 1800s, all the you know, quote unquote, disastrous things that had happened in the church. It was a scary time. So these predictions weren't really, you know, left field. It seemed like that would be the common, you know, who wouldn't think that? And yet they're wrong.
I mean, even before that, there's been so many times where they thought the church was going to fail.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the first 300 years of our faith. I mean, to be a pope and a bishop was to be a martyr. It wasn't something you got power from. It was almost a death sentence. You know, you followed this illegal superstition. Yet still, it grew in the eye of not even persecution. Here, our persecution is being laughed at, mocked, sometimes spit on, maybe locked in jail if you're pro-life and you're standing in front of an abortion clinic. But we don't get our heads chopped off and our hands cut off and our, like back where I come from. This is commonplace in the first almost four centuries.
Yeah.
So we're built on the blood of the martyrs. Yeah. You can't shake us. You can't. Go ahead and kill us. We just get stronger. And the world doesn't understand that. It frustrates the world that we're still here.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
so
I love it.
Yeah, well, so you interact a lot with people. I don't know if I mentioned on the program, but you're a carpenter. You know, you interact with youth. You interact with, you know, just your business, daily life, and also your youth ministry stuff. What would be the main obstacle for someone accepting the papacy? What do you think it is?
Well, today, I mean, you see the scandals going on. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't live by that one. And I don't know who quote, I don't know if it's a Chesterton quote, but I live by it. Judge a medicine by those that take it and not by those that don't.
That's a good quote.
It's easy to judge dissident Catholics. And, well, I know Catholics that are, divorced three times, cheating on their wife, and they do drugs. Well, okay, that's not what the Catholic Church teaches, though. How about you judge us by Mother Teresa? Well, no, if you don't want to judge us by something good, you want to judge by the bad ones. Well, the bad ones aren't Catholic. So judge the faith by those that practice it purely. And you find out it's really weird about the church. First of all, I mean, both of us as apologists and freaks of, history and theology, you can never get to the bottom of our faith. It's too deep. It's like exploring the ocean.
Yeah.
And in the world's definition, it looks hard. It is hard, but yet it's what the soul craves. You want everyone to treat you like a true Christian. Everyone, even non-Christians, want to be treated with hospitality and love and forgiveness and kindness. And these are things before the church, Rome considered, and the Roman Empire, it was considered a vice to be charitable. Like, to be charitable was something you shouldn't do, that you have to break yourself of. Not in Christianity. This is what enthralled people. Why would you want to give to the poor? Why would you want to help the sick? For what reason? Right. Well, if you are the sick and you are the poor, who else do you want being around you? Even if you don't believe it. We're just our faith is what every heart yearns for. And you have to get people to see, not the dissident priests, not the dissident bishops, not some things the Pope says. I mean, they always want to cause some anger and confusion. That's the devil's job. And I'm not one to blame everything on the devil, but man, he's real. You can't be a Catholic and not believe in angels and demons. They're real. And they have a mission. And of course they're going to hate the church. They should. Jesus said they would. He said they'd hate us and they'd kill us. So what church is there today that goes back 2,000 years acts like that church, who has councils, who has still a line of bishops in apostolic succession? And here we are.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
Praise be to God. It's crazy.
It is. Well, Paul, I can't believe the hour's flown. This is so fast.
I expected it.
Yeah. Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Praise be to God, man. Thanks, Gary. I love you, brother.
All right. And that is Paul Thomas, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up tomorrow, Dr. Douglas Beaumont is going to join our program. We're going to talk about ethics and business. It's going to be an interesting discussion. And as always, the show that started it all, the Terry and Jesse Show, is coming up next. High impact Catholic talk. And, it's like I said, it's the fastest hour in Catholic talk radio, I swear. Time for me to shut down the Midwest Command Center, turn off the dojo lights. It's been a pleasure to be with you today. And God willing, we'll talk again tomorrow. So I wish everybody a happy and blessed day. Bye-bye, everybody.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.